Of a garbage disposal site in the metropolitan area where hundreds of people are involved in something they wish would just go away, but spend well over 16 hours a quarter to become involved in something that they feel very strongly about. In my own instance, one of my lobby...
Spend over 16 hours in contact with somebody from a state agency, you think?
Yes, Senator. I believe that would be the case. Let me just finish here. In my own instance, as I'm one of my functions as a lobbyist is to represent and be the executive secretary of the Oregon Transit Association. That's a quasi-public organization, similar, I guess, to the League of Oregon Cities Association of Oregon Counties, and we represent the various transit agencies in the state. Now, most of those people would be exempt because they are public officials. But also included in our organization are a number of nonprofit organizations that are in business to transport the elderly and handicapped. And we are in constant communication, and they are too, with Denny Moore, the administrator of the Transit Division of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Occasionally, or quite often, that has to do with rulemaking. One of his main jobs is the coordination and the flow of funds from the federal government, who are deeply into the funding of this kind of transportation. And I can truthfully say, from having examined this, there are several dozen of these people who would have inadvertently or would have been involved and included under the lobbying requirements that those of us as registered lobbyists go through. I am registered. I just think that we will end up loading the Ethics Commission and Betty Reynolds' organization with a tremendous amount of paper, for the most part, that will have no effect on anyone. I would like to point out that the Capital Club strongly supports House Bill, I believe it is 2171, or at least the issue that has to do with the revisions of the ethics law. It is now in your committee. It has passed the House by a sizable margin. And we would hope that that issue could be dealt with separately from this issue, and they have tended in the past to get blurred, because we feel strongly that we want to help the Ethics Commission and its director, Betty Reynolds, to update and some very necessary administrative changes that are contained in that bill and that you'll hear about later. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions, committee? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
Yes, Roger, and your contacts with agency officials, do you ever offer them blazer tickets?
I don't want to say I never have. I've only had blazer tickets available to me about two seasons out of the last 15, and I don't think I've ever offered any blazer tickets to anybody in the administrative branch of government.
All right. Thank you very much, Roger. I just wanted to.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now, I think Senator Hamby wants to ask a question.
Oh, when Mr. Wilhelms was on the stand, I asked him if there might be some level of support for the bill if we were to exempt any lobbyist or individual that was called by the agency for purposes of rulemaking, since that's apparently the major contact, is it not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hamby, I suppose in order for me to fairly answer that on behalf of the Capital Club, I ought to go back and ask that question of the other members. My reaction would be that if I were called by Denny Moore, and I'll use that as an example, administrator of the Transit Division, I would probably end up returning calls, and somewhere in the middle of all of that, we would lose sight of who, you know, what issue it is, because we deal on a variety of different issues at any given time. And I guess end up being on the safe side, I would make sure I was registered and everybody else that was contacting was registered. And I don't see the purpose. I think it's vital to the function and operation of his office that the people he's administering are in contact with him. And I don't know of other instances, but I'm sure that if you could get any number of lobbyists up here, you would have a series of other instances where it is all in the line of duty, and there's no entertaining or anything unseemly going on. And I think it ought to be added, and I feel this very strongly. This is my 20th year as either a member of the legislature or a member of the lobby. And I can count on the fingers of one hand those legislators who I would even be suspicious of having some monetary involvement in what was going on. And I can also do the same for the lobby. The last one that all of us would suspicion, I mean, all of us could mention his name right now if we brought it up. It just doesn't happen in Oregon as it has in other states.
I was back in New Jersey a few years ago, and people told me that after Spiro Agnew went down that things got... this lawyer was telling me about some of the things that were happening back there and their zeal over ethics that was utterly amazing to me. But that's 3,000 miles away, and it's sort of like we used to always talk about how bad black people were treated in the South until somebody tried to bring busing up into the northern suburbs. That's interesting that Oregon is so pure. But I think there's a widespread concern in the populace about the immediate past director of the PUC. And one of the places where I picked that up was from the business community when they were going over there trying to remonstrate and get what they wanted, what they considered a fair hearing on the question of mandatory measured service, and they said that PNB had just kind of moved in, and they had to try and push them aside so they could get at their governmental officials. That was a new, interesting source of support for this kind of a concept for me.
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's legislation moving, at least in the House of Representatives, and perhaps I'm mistaken, in the Senate, which would deal with perhaps that kind of thing, with cutting off any PUC or several other agency officials from employment in the future. And that may not solve it in your mind, but...
I don't think that in itself would have gotten them into the offices, but certainly would be a help. Further questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Cam Ferraro.
Okay. Senator Wires, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pam Ferrara, the Executive Director of Common Cause. We're here to support the bill, and I thank you for the opportunity to be able to present our views today. What I'd like to do briefly is tell you a little bit about the history of the bill, what I think it does, and especially what I think it doesn't do. This is, I think, the fifth session for this bill. We think there is a need for the bill for the simple reason that it's a fact of life that I think you all accept, that state agencies, when they make rules and rates, have just as much of an influence over the lives of Oregonians as the legislature does. Possibly, in some cases, you might even argue that they have more of an influence. The whole purpose of the lobby disclosure statutes rest on the philosophical assumption that the public has the right to know who is influencing the decisions of the state government. That's the whole rationale. When you accept that rationale, you have to accept the rationale for needing a record, a public record, of who lobbies executive agency heads and boards and commissions. That's the need for this bill. Particularly last session, the bill was gone through, in my estimation, in a great deal of detail, and we worked out all of the problems, as far as I can tell, to a great extent. I would like to go over what the bill, in our opinion, doesn't do, and I think it'll highlight a couple of the things in the bill. As you can see in the bold type, there's not a lot of new language. There's simply a new definition of administrative action. We worked on that very hard last session, and we... rather than open the door to everything, we thought the rate or rule was the appropriate place to go because that's where the action takes place. There are a number of objections to the bill, and since I've been in contact with the bill during my entire duration as Director of Common Cause, I know them all. One of the things that's often said is that it will result in huge increases in the number of registered lobbyists. We don't think it probably will for a couple of reasons. There are 15 other states that require this kind of disclosure. And by the way, I don't intend to go into it, but one of the attachments to my written testimony is a copy of a lobby report from California so that you can see what it actually looks like. The number of registered lobbyists range from 200 to 1,600. The 200 is Hawaii. The 1,600 is Minnesota. Practically speaking, it's likely, and I think Mr. Martin, in a way, confirmed this in his testimony by saying that he spends a lot of time with administrative agencies. We think that, practically speaking, the lobbyists who are most likely to fall under this are the ones who are already registered. I'd like to comment on Mr. Martin's description of the sorts of people who might be very involved with, say, siting a landfill and might be involved with the DEQ and those sorts of agencies. I guess it's our assumption that if indeed they are lobbying, that they ought to register as lobbyists. If they are lobbying, then the public has a right to know who is influencing those decisions. Perhaps as issues become hot and newsworthy and timely, there might be a number of people who might need to register for a particular issue, and then after the issue is resolved, they would withdraw. But it really is our feeling, looking at two things, looking at the lobbyists, the number of lobbyists who are already registered and lobbyists in other states, that there probably wouldn't be an explosion of the numbers of lobbyists. We don't think it would be a bookkeeping nightmare because currently lobbyists who lobby the legislature and are registered and have to report have to already separate out the money that they spend on administrative versus legislative because they've got to report the legislative spending. So assuming that the other half is administrative, it doesn't seem like that would be a great burden. It will not apply to citizens having ordinary contact with the state agency. For example, a person owning a farm who might need to call LCDC for information, that kind of thing. That's not what the bill is intended to cover, and I don't think as it's written that it does cover that. It will not apply to licensed professionals representing clients before a state agency's formal proceedings. For example, an attorney representing someone in a contested case hearing. That's specified in the bill. And it will not apply to public officials contacting state agencies in their official capacities. I believe that Senator Hamby's question about a public official being called or calling to deal in some way in an official capacity with a state agency is covered in the bill as an exemption. So those are all the things the bill doesn't do. What it does do is it recognizes the logic of the lobby disclosure statutes and extends that logic to saying state agencies and boards and commissions make important decisions and people who lobby those agencies and influence them ought to report. I think I covered everything I wanted to say. I would just draw your attention to on page 3 of the bill, line 28, is the provision that was put in after a great deal of discussion at the end of last session with the School Boards Association and several other lobbyists, and that is the exemption for the executive official or public official acting in an official capacity. One of the things, though, I would like to emphasize is that does not exempt them from lobby disclosure totally. If they are lobbying, in other words, attempting to influence the action other than acting in their official capacity, then they would require to register and report as lobbyists the way public officials do now when they attempt to influence your actions as legislators. So they are not totally exempt. They are only exempt in their official capacity, performing their official duties, let's say. I think I'll stop there, and I hope I'd be able to answer any questions you might have. Great.
Line 26 of page 1, I have...
Oh, yes.
I have a note there. I don't remember exactly what happened. Is that a Does the word or administrative need to
yes,
be added?
Yes. I meant to mention that also. On page 1, line 26, what was left out, we've got the definition of administrative action in there, but what got left out in the definition of lobbying, this is the only place in the whole bill that it was left out, is it needs to say, the end of the sentence, legislative action or administrative action. Other than that, it's everywhere in the bill that it needs to be.
It should be legislative action or administrative,
action.
Not legislative or administrative action. I'm
last session's bill said or legislative action or administrative action.
Okay.
I don't know if that would make a difference. I suppose that would be a legal decision.
I don't either,
decision.
Except that went by legislative council last session?
Yes.
That's fine.
Okay. I would need to double check on that, but I'm fairly sure action was used twice.
Counsel?
I take it that this bill is only supposed to apply to state agencies. This does not apply to local governments in terms of who's being lobbied. I'm looking at lines.
Executive agency, state regulatory commission, state agency, or any other body in the executive agency.
Right. That's where I'm looking. I assume that refers
right.
to a state executive agency.
Yes.
Would you have
right.
any objection if we put state in there?
No.
Just to clarify that?
I certainly wouldn't.
Okay.
Senator. All right. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 565, and now we'll go to Senate Bill 1016, and Senator Houck's alter ego is here.
Do I identify myself or? Okay, my name is Tracy Cummings, Senator Cub Houck's legislative assistant, and I'm giving this testimony for Dr. Thad Stanford, who is out of the state and would like to be here but could not be here. I'm sorry I am unable to attend the hearing today. I have a conflict that I cannot resolve. I want to express my position in favor of Senate Bill 1016. This is a bill that exempts youth sports volunteers from civil liability under most circumstances. It is a Good Samaritan bill. I have an interest in such matters stemming from my practice in orthopedic sports medicine and also from my interest in law and medicine. I'm currently an adjunct professor of law and medicine at Willamette University College of Law. 2 or 3 years ago in New Jersey, a little league player was hit in the eye while trying to catch a fly ball. He brought action against his coach, alleging that his coach did not teach him well enough to protect himself. Unfortunately, this case was settled. The immediate response was a great fear on the part of many youth sports coaches that something similar might happen to them. The result has been a significant problem for all groups that rely on volunteers to assist them with their sports programs. There are literally millions of volunteers in this country that serve in this capacity. There are tens of thousands that do this in Oregon. New Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania have passed statutes similar to Senate Bill 1016. Like statutes are pending in California, New York, Texas, Massachusetts, Ohio, New Hampshire, Colorado, and Nebraska. The bill has been introduced to both houses of the United States Congress. The problem is a threat to a system that provides much for young people of Oregon. This system is essentially dependent on volunteers. Unfortunately, liability insurance is out of the question. It's either too expensive or simply unavailable. It is in the public interest that these programs continue and that they cannot proceed without volunteers. I feel this statute will be effective. The Good Samaritan bill for volunteer team physicians, which has passed a few years ago in Oregon, has resulted in much less reluctance on the part of doctors to volunteer. I have suggested two rather minor changes that I believe the bill should be stated to deal with volunteer sports coaches, managers, game officials, and league officers. This statement occurs several places in the statute. Under Section 3B, I believe the wording could be more effective as follows. Nothing in this section shall be considered to grant immunity to any coach, manager, game official, or league officer who has not participated in a recognized safety orientation and training program, such as the American Coaching Effectiveness Program or the National Youth Sports Coaches Association's program, or a safety orientation and training program established by the league of which the coach, manager, league officer, or game official is affiliated. I have included a handout of this bill which incorporates these changes. The reasons for the latter change is simply to encourage better safety. It seems that one asking for this limited immunity could make a contribution by learning more about making games safer. Thank you for your consideration. Thad C. Stanford.
All right, any questions? All right, thanks for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Don Hitchin?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Don Hitchin, representing Little League Baseball Incorporated. We support wholeheartedly this bill. The mentions that were made by the young lady are only too true in both the protection for the coaches and managers and league officials. But on the other hand, if we don't have these volunteers, we will start losing teams, which means we will not be able financially to provide programs for the youngsters. That is the biggest concern of Little League. I thank you for your time and would be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Brenneman.
Yes. Have you been experiencing a loss of coaches and the personnel that volunteers
in
your program?
We have lost some programs because they could not pay the cost of the insurance.
About are people who used to coach for you declining not to coach anymore and listing this as the reason that they're liable?
When I refer to losing a program, sir, I don't refer to one or two individuals. I'll refer to a whole league going under because they could not afford the expenses of insurance.
I know that, but the insurance part of it, but are coaches telling you they're not going to coach anymore because they're afraid of their liability?
Well, in the case of Little League, there we have insurance for the Little League coaches and managers, but there are many other sports programs that don't have that coverage that causes this to happen. But where I refer to as a league going under is the fact that they don't have the money to pay that insurance to cover the coaches and managers.
Okay.
There are apparently no problems with Little League, but there's some other program that are having problems. Like, what would that be?
Well, there are some programs that are not nationally known. When I refer to nationally known, I'm talking about Little League, Babe Ruth, Connie Mack, programs of this nature. There are local programs, and I refer to those as the Sunset recreational program that takes place during the summer. It is not affiliated with a national organization, but it is a program that is in existence in a small community out on the Sunset Highway. Those are the people that are going to be confronted with and have been confronted with the cost of trying to get insurance.
Has there been any program for the Sunset program, any activity that's been eliminated recently that you know of?
No, not in that particular program, but I cite that as an example of where this sort of thing can happen. I know there have been in California, there have been some leagues that had to fold as far as Little League is concerned because they could not come up with the money to pay for the insurance.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Hitchin, for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, Senator.
Are you aware of any of the actual lawsuits known?
Not regarding Little League, but other types of lawsuits, yes. There have been a couple in Portland that been settled, but they were pretty healthy.
Senator Wires.
This is a little off the point, but I can't resist asking it anyway. You're talking here about training and safety and so forth. What kind of training do you have when people should deal with in Little League when fathers, maybe mothers too. I've never heard of a mother, but I don't want to be sexist here.
Yes, mothers
when they
do.
When they want to whip up
when they
on
get angry.
Yeah, they
yes.
want there are all kinds of stories. Some of them that I've heard that have been eyewitness accounts about fistfights at Little League games. I think some of them even include members of my extended family. I'd hate to say that, but it's true. What do you teach people about that? Here are all these young boys, and they see their father hitting the referee, or the umpire, or the coach from the other team, or something.
Well, again, I think primarily cases that I have heard of, it has been a spectator who has taken up an argument with an official. That is an umpire or a coach or manager.
Frequently, the spectator is a father of one of the ball players.
Right. That's right.
And that wouldn't be covered by this bill because it says willful acts aren't covered. So I'm not getting after you about it, but I'm just curious. No. What do you teach? How do you teach the people to deal about that?
Well, each league, and I'm talking now of Little League because that's my primary concern. Each league does have probably a dozen league officials. Those league officials circulate around to the various ball games to try and support the umpire decisions and try to control the adult spectator.
So it's like now, in the majors where they've got people there from the commissioner's office. Okay.
Now, this again, these people are all volunteers, but one program that I do wish to talk about as far as Little League is concerned is that Little League has already started the program that is referenced into the addition the young lady mentioned about training people as far as not just how to teach the game, but also how to relate to the youngsters and take the training that is required. And we fully support that requirement for taking this training. But Little League is in the process of doing that now.
Senator Hamby. All right. Thanks for being here, Mr. Ritchie.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1016. And so you can get out. All right, we're going to go into work session on Senate Bill 631, and that won't take but a couple minutes, and I'll tell you what other bills or what the order will be for the other bills. This is the bill now that would allow. Is the Hand and Gross bill the current? Is that where we are currently?
The Hand and Gross bill is where we are currently. That contains the amendments to 631.
631.
Senate Bill 631 should be on the bottom of your stack, listed last on the agenda. It contains the amendments that have been agreed to by the county officials and the state mental health program folks. And they've both indicated that they like the bill the way it is, as amended on the Hand and Gross version, and are ready to see it go out. There is in the file a letter from the Association of Community Mental Health Program Directors indicating the cost control provisions that the bill would implement, and some letters from some local folks, and a letter from, I think, the Mental Health Division, which says they approve the bill as written but propose the amendments that have been incorporated. And then the division urges passage of the bill with those recommended changes.
Are we in work session, Mr. Chair?
Yes, we are in work session.
I'll move the bill then.
All right, Senator Hammond moves Senate Bill 631, as amended, as shown by the hand and gross copy, to the floor to be passed. Discussion.
Call the roll. Senator Wire. This isn't the bill that we sent out. We sent the other bill out a while ago that had to do with dangerously mentally ill.
This is a different one.
Yeah.
All right. Call the roll, please.
Redmond?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Wire?
Aye.
Drive?
Aye. All right, that carries. Okay, now...
Mark takes over.
Can I have the witness list up here, please, and to see where we're going to go on our remaining bills? Got a little more than we can handle, I think, here today.
We haven't been taking very long in each bill either.
No, let's see who we've got. I think we've got all right. Judge Beatty's here apparently on two bills. Is that right, Judge? You're here on two bills? Okay. And then we've got witness here on 597 from Portland. So, and then, let's see, Sheriff Burks, are you here on 25, on 913, is that it?
Yes, I am, and we have a witness here also
from Morrow County. From Morrow County, well, all right. I think we'll take that bill right now then.